What's up, guys? Ben Reed here with the Next Gen Sales Leader Podcast. I'm here with Madison Brussman. He is a spiritual coach, and he is the guy who saved me in the Costa Rican jungle. And we're going to get into a crazy story for you guys shortly, but he helps entrepreneurs with their spiritual journey. And welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks for having me. And got to reconnect.
So we got to start with the story, man, because I feel like anybody who's listening to this is like, spiritual coach, how does that have anything to do with B2B growth and GTM and all the stuff that I typically cover with next gen sales leaders? So we're going to get into why this matters. But I think before we get into the why, which it does matter, it's probably the number one constraint of your personal and business growth, just saying. So if you stay to the end, we'll talk about the reason behind that. But also, I want to hear from you, your perspective on the crazy story we had in Costa Rica. We went on a crazy retreat. We ended up at the top of a mountain in Costa Rica in the rainforest, and chaos ensued. Spiritual breakthroughs came out, and I'm curious if you could share that story.
So yeah, Ben and I, we met in a 6-day Costa Rica retreat, and we actually, I think we met like right before we got in this like little private jet plane to go to this this place on the coast. And ultimately it was a healing treat. So we're all there, and a lot of it was different entrepreneurs and people at their own businesses, and a lot of doing these like really heavy exercises, breath work and plant medicine, just anything to really get to the bottom of our subconscious and to kind of break free from things. But what happens, you know, when we're letting go of all this heavy energy is the outside world just reflects that. So there is just a total kind of reality show of chaos that's happening on the outside, and as people kind of wrestle with their own demons, and the details are quite something.
We got to give them some like visuals. So imagine, everyone, when you get on a small jet, you fly over the Costa Rican jungle, and you land on this little kind of beach airstrip. It's probably like, you know, half a mile from the beach. And you get into a bunch of SUVs, and you start driving down the road through the middle of the jungle. And you take a left-hand turn into this crazy mountain type of very, very steep path going through and winding through the jungle. And you end up at the top of this mountain where there's this little oasis without everything you could possibly imagine, from howler monkeys to tarantulas to toucans and crazy birds and insects and snakes. And it's just very lush, and it's raining, and it's this kind of yoga style, like Buddhist kind of temple looking open air dining environment with these crazy like glamping style dome shape igloos that we all stayed in. And there's a stream running through the middle of the mountain, and you could go down and dip in the stream, and all these kind of dirt paths. And it's just a crazy, crazy experience with this crazy vista view overlooking the ocean many miles away. And you go there, and it's all about, to Madison's point, healing and exploring, you know, what's holding you back. So that was the situation. And for me, it was wild because we did crazy breath work there. We did these many different kind of meditation sessions. You and I kind of had our own one-on-one. But to give people a real sense of what we're talking about here, it's like a situation where you pause life, you get out of your day-to-day, out of your business, out of your selling, out of your go-to-market strategies and tactics, and you look deeply at yourself and you start to ask, what is it about me that's holding me back? Excuse me. I shook the whole desk. But what is it about me that is holding me back? And that is a hard question to answer, or maybe you would say it's an easy question to answer. So can you describe, you know, give me the basics of what you do as a spiritual coach and why you think it matters?
Yeah. So leading with what you said, right, is figuring out what holds us back is everything. So much of our, what you do in business is blaming people, our business partners, our clients, maybe. But this works really about looking within and realizing, well, what is it about us that we can take responsibility for that holds us back? And ultimately, it comes down to fear. Now, that's where I get into my work. And it's that fear that we're not aware of. So, you know, when you get into the woods with people, really, you get into their work, it can be fear of failure. We all know that as an entrepreneur, as a, you know, a salesperson, the fear of the rejection. But a lot of times, it's the fear of success. Who are we going to be when we reach that level? And what's going to come with that? You know, whether it's people who judge us or leave us, or the responsibilities that will come with that. But until we actually go within, we're not really sure of what we're afraid of. So all of these modalities, you know, what we did at the retreat, whether it's breath work or plant medicine or different exercises, right? They're all there to really explore what is it in the back of our mind that we're truly afraid of, and be able to actually work through that and confront that and break through that. So my job as a spiritual coach is to figure out and identify what exactly are those beliefs and fears that you have, and then actually help you break through them so you can really just be your fullest potential.
So where did you have to go personally? And I'm saying where as if there's a location, but I mean like in the metaphysical sense of where, in your psyche, in your mind, on your journey, actually in the real world, on your career journey. I know you have a crazy story, and you obviously went down this road. You chose entrepreneurs for a reason. You chose spiritual coaching for a reason. Can you tell everyone the story of how you got here?
Yeah, and the location of where is everything, right? Where do we actually figure this stuff out? So, you know, I'm doing spiritual coaching now. I work with all sorts of guys from high tech to government to top sales leaders. But actually, I started off as an entrepreneur. And I started off when I was 16 years old, actually, and growing up in Silicon Valley, and started my first tech company. And it actually did really well starting off. And I had this dream of being this, really just this next Mark Zuckerberg figure. And I told myself, you know, at even 16, you know, if, you know, in a few years, I want to be a billionaire. And I just put all this pressure on myself, really, and learned to code at a young age. And my story goes where, you know, I ended up going to school to study computer science, actually. And my roommates and I, went to this very prestigious school in the Northeast, and but we got caught cheating on this computer science exam. And a few weeks later, we got kicked out of this university. And within a few weeks, I just woke up and my hands just were permanently closed in incredible, incredible amounts of pain. And I just couldn't open them. And my entire heart was closed. My whole body was just an absolute shock. And for the next 2 years, I went to everywhere in Western medicine and they just couldn't figure it out. They had no solution for me, the best hospitals, doctors. And for the next 6 years, I'd actually remain in this pain. And so I ended up just dropping out of university. And getting back to your question of where, well, I traveled all around the world, 25 different countries, everywhere from living, you know, in Jerusalem and studying there for a year, studying scripture, to being in Amazon and doing ayahuasca. But even after all of that, I really didn't have the solution I was looking for, which was, I was really trying to figure out, well, how do I use my hands again? How do I get out of this incredible pain that I was in? And the question of where is so important, because I'd been everywhere in the world. I had talked to everyone, and yet I still had the same problems. So it wasn't until I actually started to go the one place I'd never gone, which is within myself. And by within, I mean actually into my heart, into my past, and just seeing all the different traumas that I experienced. As I started to feel all the grief that I was storing and the shame and anger that I had within myself, in my heart, these emotional traumas are actually in the body. As I started to go within myself, actually inward into my heart, and being able to learn how to let all these traumas go and opening my heart again, at the exact same time that I started to feel these traumas break through them in my heart, is the exact same times that I started to open my hands again. And I got the ability to actually be able to heal people with my hands, and to unlock this ability to really be able to be in touch with people and their emotions and their blocks. And so much of what I do in this work really is I take people on the exact same journey. So many people as entrepreneurs, top salespeople, we're so stuck in our heads, our minds, overthinking. But when we can get back to who we really are in our hearts and go, and it requires doing the trauma work to get there, then we can be in touch with ourselves and in touch with other people. And so what I do now is I help people on that same journey, really getting past their own blocks, out of their own way, and into their hearts. And when we can do that, we unlock everything, whether it's in ourself, our life, and certainly our business.
I can say from my own experience that the ability to see myself as an entrepreneur and have good judgment as an entrepreneur, discernment, if you want to use that word, as an entrepreneur, it comes to a certain level of awareness of one's own belief systems, of themselves, of the world, of others, of how we relate to each other. And that level of awareness, I can say back in the past, was either lacking awareness, or the awareness had a particular focus that wasn't correct in terms of I was looking at the world with through a lens or a rose-colored glasses that weren't real. And so this gets into kind of life coaching 101 and all the different places I've gone from, you know, Landmark to something called Ascension Leadership Academy to various retreats. But essentially the idea is we are all, this is like super Landmark. If you ever haven't done Landmark, I still think everyone should go do it because it's a good introduction to life coaching from a business perspective or a life perspective. But the idea is we're all meaning-making machines. We make up meaning in our lives, the stories that we tell ourselves. And some of those stories are not true. And I know you're going to talk about this, but for anybody listening and you're kind of about to tune out and you're saying, hey, I'm a business guy. I came here for a business podcast and I came here for selling stuff. And I want to know tactically, how do I go get my next $1 million? I want you to tune in and realize that the number one thing you can do beyond all the tactics and all the strategies is to clear away the cobwebs of bullshit that are really just the stories and the false beliefs that you're telling about yourself and reality. And so that's why this matters. And so what Madison here is getting at is that he has a tactic, a strategy, a program, a way of thinking, and a path he has traveled himself that has allowed him to get to the source of what is all holding us back in our own personal growth. Did I describe that right? That's my understanding.
Extremely well, yes. And yeah, I agree full-heartedly with what you just said, yeah.
So tell us about what is the process? So let's say there's somebody brand new, because I'm sure somebody listening to this hasn't been in life coaching before or hasn't gone down that spiritual journey. Some people might say, oh, it's woo-woo, or this isn't scientific, or there's not like real proof or something like that, and they're skeptical. And they're like, no, I just want tactics and strategies. Tell me how to build some more landing pages. How would you introduce them to this? And what kind of process would you go through with them if they were a new client or if they just wanted to do more research?
Well, what I would say is ultimately, you know, for most of our businesses, right, they're buying us. So like I'm a coach, you know, you have a brand. And that's what they're buying. And people, they're buying the real you. And the more they can feel that really, that authentic you, the better. But if we have masks up, if we don't even know who we are, then how are we going to be able to have a relationship with our romantic partner, our business partner, our employees? If we don't have that grounding self-knowing. So a lot of what we're doing in this work is we're learning to let go. So that means letting go of the traumas, the masks, the blocks, anything that's just not helping us is just learning to let that go. So much of this work is it's really self-improvement. And so if you're not actually thinking about how to better yourself as a leader, an entrepreneur, or as a salesperson, by actually improving yourself and you're just looking at outside tactics and strategies, then you're not really growing. You're just learning, but you yourself, you're not really growing as a person.
So, but I want to go kind of deeper into like tactically. So they say, okay, Madison, I'm all ears. I know that I don't know some things and I know that I would like to see more clearly myself, reality, have better judgment. And what is the steps they have to take to go through to get that awareness?
Yeah. So the most important thing, right, is in my own story is I had this physical problem, and the whole time I'm looking outside myself, I'm looking at my hands and what's the problem with this? And the first thing we need to do is we need to stop doing that. And we got to go within. And what I mean by going within is we actually need to check with how do we feel? So this entire work is dependent on the emotions that we feel. So much of what we're doing, whether it's overworking or, you know, substances, it's trying to get us out of our inner world, how we feel. And the most important thing we can do is to be in touch with the actual emotions that we're feeling. And so some of those emotions might be very challenging, right? Maybe we don't feel that we're good enough. This is a huge one with most of the top entrepreneurs, or that we're not worthy enough of a certain level of success. Or that if we reach a certain state, people will leave us, they'll abandon us. But it's getting in touch with the actual emotions that we're experiencing. Because those emotions are what dictates our belief. And those emotions are usually, those are the traumas that we experienced early on. So much so that, you know, they're in our subconscious that we can't even see them. But the beautiful part about the work that I do is I work with a body. So somatically speaking, these trapped emotions, these traumas, they're stored in the body. So I was a computer programmer, right? So I understand this works. And it's the same thing with the body. Certain traumas, emotions, they're stored in certain locations of the body. So for example, you might fear in the kidneys. or grief will be in the heart or sadness. So you can actually be in, help people get in touch with where in their body do they feel tense? Where do they feel that there's stress? And then actually helping them to see, well, what are the emotions behind that in their body that are there? And as I help them guide them into that, into their body, past the layers of their mind, they can actually start to work through these emotions and let them go. And they start to free their mind, their body, and then their perspective changes. As they let go of these old emotions, these fears, their entire outlook, right, their glasses, so to say, it starts to change how they see reality, which changes how they view people and their business.
For the intellectual, A-type, sure, super cerebral, analytical person listening to this, which is like every GTM engineer on planet Earth, if you are a GTM engineer, you're probably super in your head right now and trying to, you know, make sense of what was just said. But I guess for those types of people who aren't deeply in touch with their emotions or haven't done this, what does that actually look like? Like if you are going, guiding somebody through a meditation or some type of session, what would you call, is this like a therapy session? Is this a, like, what is the term we would use?
The kind of terminology people use is they call it energy healing. So it's not therapy. So actually I come from an entire family of therapists, mom, dad, the whole family line. And I wasn't therapy myself, but therapy is, it's like, it'd be like using Windows, you know, 94 compared to the iPhone now or something, right? It's an entire level of healing technology, and it's based on, it's called energy healing. But so, yeah, the real process behind it, yeah?
No, go ahead. I'm curious.
Yeah, so the real process behind it is it's just guiding people into their body where they feel these blockages. So often what I have people do is I help them, so, you know, for example, visualize their idea of success. Maybe that's making 200K a month or having this perfect partner in mind. And then having them actually, you know, be able to close their eyes. And if you're watching this, you can do it. It's a great exercise. I do it with my top clients. And actually tuning into yourself and checking with yourself. And as you hold that in mind, just asking yourself, is there anything within you that resists that? And for most people, you know, they're going to say, yeah, I don't quite feel worthy of it, or actually, I'm scared that I won't be able to keep that partner if I attract her or him. And so consciously speaking, as entrepreneurs, salespeople, we know what we want. We're after the money. We're after the, you know, the benchmarks. But subconsciously, to out of our awareness, so oftentimes, we don't want those things. So when we find ourselves in the outside world not hitting that stuff, often it's because there's some part of us deep within that's scared of it, that doesn't want it, doesn't want the baggage that comes with it. Until we are actually so brutally honest with ourselves, radically honest, and we acknowledge that within ourselves and work through it, we're never going to allow ourselves to reach those heights that we consciously want, because our subconscious mind is always pulling us down because of the deep internal fears that we have of achieving that success or not.
I remember when I was, I want to say 25, and I was just involved with my first for-profit business. So I worked in politics and nonprofits before and as a fundraiser, which is very similar to selling. But I made a transition into a company called Energy Media Group, which is a marketing firm that I ended up being a small percentage owner in. And I remember about 8 months into it, we had noticed that we were going to sell the company for, I don't know, $3 million or something like that. And this means I was going to make a couple hundred thousand dollars, which for me at the time was like, big, big buku bucks, super exciting, you know? And I remember we went out to a bar that night and we were celebrating and everyone was excited. And I remember taking some shots of tequila with the guys and it was exciting, but there was this weird hollow feeling inside that I didn't want it to happen. And I distinctly remember this, and I distinctly remember being like, I don't need the money. And I've always said that to myself, like, I don't need the money. This isn't about the money. But every time I say that, I wonder if that's just like a surface level, conscious level excuse to say I'm not worthy of the money, you know? And so this is something that has happened for a while. And I'd say this 14th business I'm on, the first eight were for a large part really failures. I sold millions of dollars in revenue, but for various reasons, we had trouble and things didn't work out, whether it was with business partners or whatever. So I always wondered what was holding me back. Like, why am I choosing these business partners? Why am I choosing this market? Why am I choosing this company? Why am I choosing this product offering? Now, part of it was ignorance, lack of discernment, right? Lack of judgment. But I wonder if to some degree, like, I was scared of succeeding in a way. And even to this very moment, like, as we speak, it's not like I'm Jeff Bezos. You know, I have a much higher ceiling to hit. And I've consistently wondered, like, what is holding me back? And so I'm curious, like, you know, we talked about worthiness and we talked about you and I personally when we met, and we talked about how that ultimately gets back to this idea of not being abandoned. And so I'm wondering, can you speak to that a little bit? And because I'm trying to use me as an example to make this more concrete for people who are listening to this, because it can sound a little abstract.
Yeah. So inherently, you know, as we're speaking about this, it's probably going to be very new to most people. And that's the point, is it's so subconscious to us, but also because we're so afraid of it that we'll push away any idea of this, right? But yeah, the idea is most of our greatest traumas, like probably 95% of the work I do behind the scenes, is I help people heal a lot of their abandonment traumas. So the idea of abandonment really is anytime, you know, we have a breakup, right? And we just, our heart is in so much pain, or our business partner leaves us, or an employee, is often it's just re-triggering early emotions that we had as a child. And the reason abandonment is just so, it's so heavy on our hearts, and it develops all these other spiderweb of beliefs around it, is that to be abandoned as a child, if you think primitively speaking, right, like a five-year-old in the 13th century, right, or, you know, just even older in your ancestral line, is to be abandoned as a child is to die. So for most salespeople, 95% of what I'm helping them with, you know, if their fears are rejections, you know, on the sales call, of being let down of and all of that, is they're just deeply afraid that of an abandonment trauma. And if you ask them where do they feel that rejection in their heart, every salesperson will tell you again, their heart. They will point to physically in their heart. And that's just where the abandonment traumas are stored. Now this is more the psychological realm, right? If a child's abandoned, children are very self-prescriptive. They think that they're the center of the world. They come to the world and everybody is, you know, looking after them, and they attribute everything to them themselves. So they're inherently a little bit egotistical. But a child who's abandoned, the first thing that they say is, it must be my fault. I must not be good enough. I must not be worthy of love. And that's usually where it comes from early on. And it doesn't have to be physical abandonment. It could be emotional. You know, maybe our parents were just not fully heartedly there with us. Maybe we came home and one guy I worked with at GTM, right? He said his dad just had the TV on every night and wouldn't even look at him. And imagine what that does to a young kid after 15 years and your dad never quite opens up to you or asks you how you're doing. Is what kind of beliefs do we pick up from that? And so when we, as a literally kid, believe that we're not lovable or we're not worthy, imagine going into business and you try to charge the prices you want, you try to hire at the rates you want, and you can never seem to quite do it. It's like you're moving, trying to move water upstream, and everything's resistance. And it's just because we are resistant, right? And so until we actually do that deep inner work, whether you want to call it psychological or that trauma, that inner work, we're never going to let ourselves be greater than we perceive ourselves. So we'll never reach the economic heights, the partner we want, until we can actually let go of those hidden shackles around our heart.
It's interesting because I was listening to a podcast with Alex Hormozi about how he doesn't believe in manifestation. And he goes on to explain that he thinks it's too much of an abstraction and it doesn't actually describe what has to occur, which is like really taking action. And it's not that we're sitting there like in a room chanting and then all of a sudden things happen. And so it's interesting because I know that he's much more of the very type A logical kind of thinker, and any type of abstraction from the actual tactics is not even worth talking about in a sense. What's interesting to me, though, and I think this is where I'm trying to bring people who have that mindset over to this kind of thinking, is what I have found is that there are things in my life that I would find that are blocking me that just seemed, it was like, how is this happening over and over and over again? How do I keep on finding myself with bad business partners and bad employees or a bad market? Like, how do I keep making these same decisions? And how do I keep getting the same result? And it's kind of like that old adage of, you know, shame on me if I, you know, you do it five times in a row with the same exact situation. But I would keep doing it. And the question is why, right? Why was I doing it? Or why was I making that choice? And I fully believed that these were the right choices. Now, if I could give you all these very specific scenarios, I could probably explain it logically. But I think there was something deeper there. Because looking back on it now with my current perspective, I'm like, so obvious, right? It's so obvious what was happening there because I wasn't deeply inside of the emotional experience and going through it. So I guess the question is like, why does that keep happening? And how does this relate to, I don't want to use the word manifesting, but how does this relate to creating a life that we actually want without getting our own way? And how can you describe that for those logical, analytical thinkers of the world?
Yeah, great question. So as you described, right, you could use the term self-sabotage, right? We find ourselves doing things, taking actions and decisions that we think are good, but end up just, hitting us in the head, you know, whether we like it or not. So yeah, so much of, you know, the decision-making that people make is out of their heads, right? But if I were to ask you or someone else, well, think about your wife or the most important decision in your life, right? Would you use your heart or would you use your head? Do you really need to make, you know, a Venn diagram and, you know, do an MBA calculus to see if, you know, she has the right traits? It's like, no, you choose out of your heart. And so why can't it be the same thing for your business or in sales? And so even science shows now that, right, you know, our three greatest intelligence centers, they're not the brain, they're in our gut, you know, like literally our gut where we make our decisions in our heart. And these actually through science show that, you know, those channels, they move up to their head and they communicate with the rest. So if you're only making decisions out of your head, you're stuck there, but you're not aware of your heart and how you feel or your gut, then you're completely leaving off the table your ability to make decisions from another place. And so for most people, like the Hormozis of the world, maybe that kind of calculated mind, that controlling mind, it does have a certain level of success to it. But there's another way, which is to be in touch with your heart and your gut. And that's where you start getting more into this spirituality, the mystical. You start letting things happen, things that you can't even rationally explain. And it's just a higher level of consciousness in operating the world where, you know, certain synchronicities happen. You can't explain it. You can't even predict it, but they just happen. And it makes life more fun. Now, getting back to you said about, you know, the rationality of all this. Well, you know, Einstein had this quote, you know, Einstein about, you know, either we believe that, you know, we live in a miracles and life is, you know, mystical and fun, or we don't, and it's boring. And so we just got to make a choice of whether, you know, we want to be open to the possibilities, or we want to close our minds and hearts off to, you know, everything's so calculated and predictable and leaving the magic, you know, under the rug. So, yeah, the more we can open up to the idea that, yeah, there's intelligence centers within us that can really work for us, but we have to, the key is letting go. So all of this kind of mental figuring things out, science, it's all about control. And the process I take people through is the process of surrender, which is letting go of trying to figure things out, letting go. And that doesn't mean not taking action, but it just means from a mental place within is just letting go of that control. And when we can do that, well, we end up, you know, finding more peace inside, more stability, more centeredness, more calmness. But then on the outside, things actually flow easier. And we can't articulate it, we can't rationalize it, but it just does.
I just wrote a post on LinkedIn talking about the number one piece of business advice I would give to anybody who's in GTM or an entrepreneur or trying to sell something in the B2B space is this idea that the vast majority of decisions and thoughts you have will be wrong, especially in the beginning. Now, ideally, you start to get less and less wrong over time because you learn, because you start to see a lot of things, you gather data, and then intuitively you start to feel. That's where the feeling comes from after all that data comes in. But at the beginning, especially in my first 8 businesses, like I was kind of like blind to myself, to the world, like we were talking about. And so I would make a lot of wrong moves. The problem is I would double down on the wrong move and I would go in the wrong direction for like 2 to 3 years or 2 to 3 months. And I would think I was doing the right thing. And I sometimes probably had the feeling. I know I had the feeling. Intuitively, this can't be right. But I logically, I was like, no, we're going forward. And I had to control the outcome. And that control actually kept me imprisoned in that stage of my growth.
So I don't want to cut you off, but what you just did was amazing, right? And it connects to my story. As you said, control. This is what you did. And this is what I did. This is my hands were closed for 6 years.
I made a fist, just so you know.
Yeah, you made a fist and you said control. And so the whole, you know, real reason my hands did this is that, you know, so much of my ego, all this pressure I had on myself, I said, you know, at 18, if I'm not a billionaire, I said this, that I would kill myself. Imagine an 18-year-old saying that to himself, the kind of pressure that he feels about that. But I didn't have that level of support and consciousness and awareness back then. And so even though my ego was so strong on being this Zuckerberg figure, this billionaire, in my heart, I really didn't want to. That wasn't my path. And so because I couldn't listen to my heart and how I actually felt my own intuition, my body had to sabotage me and say no more. And I had to close and said no more. And so it wasn't until I was able to actually let go of that mental, that egoic control of what I thought I had to do, that I got back into what I really wanted to do in my heart. And so, yeah, but anyway, not to cut you off, but it was such a great connection, you know, of how you even naturally, you know, use your hands and your body.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that the problem with control is that it assumes that you know what to do. And it assumes that you have control, right? That you actually can impact the change. Now, this is where it's so counterintuitive. And that's the thing about business, life, I mean, hell, is counterintuitive, right? Because if it was logical and it was obvious, then everybody would just go do it and everybody would just be a billionaire, right? But what I found in the path of my own journey of all the businesses I've started is that a lot of the things that you need to know or the decisions you need to make or the discernment you need to have is actually counterintuitive. And so now the thing about control is that it also, it actually prevents, to some degree, I would argue, the inability to feel, especially when you're not aware of it. And there's a great quote, there's a couple great quotes from a couple big people that you might know, obviously, Steve Jobs. He says the number one thing that matters at the end of the day is taste. And he says it's all about taste. And there's this other guy, I can't remember the guy's name, very big music producer. He was asked on a podcast, you know, what makes you don't play music, you don't know the instruments, you don't write music, but you are one of the biggest music producers out there and you guide all these people. And the person asked him, well, why, how are you so successful? And he said, the number one thing is my trust in my taste. And then there was another example where I was on a call with one of my graphic designers and designers for an application I'm building for one of my businesses. And I kept on saying, no, that doesn't look right. That doesn't feel right. That's like, you know, those types of words. And I was like, isn't it obvious to you? And this was only like 6 months ago. And she's like, no, Ben. She's like, it's ultimately all about taste. And I don't have the same taste as you do. And she even went on to say, I think your taste is better than mine. But taste is something that it's like you can't, if you don't see it, if you don't feel it, it's not obvious to everybody else. And I thought it was obvious to everybody else. Ultimately, what I'm getting at here is that taste matters, and taste is a form of intuition. Yes. And even Jeff Bezos says the same thing. He said all of the big decisions in his life, all the things like the big, big inflection points of where he moved, ultimately came down to gut. It ultimately came down to feeling. It ultimately came down to an intuition or a taste. And so he says, you know, yes, you can do analysis, and yes, you can pull all the reports, and you can try to do the best you can. But at the end of the day, you have a choice. And that choice is, okay, take all of this information, but ultimately, what is it, what feels right? Especially when you're moving a massive business like Amazon is on in a certain direction, or you're choosing a certain path for your startup. So my whole thing is like, yes, you need analysis. Yes, you need to run A/B tests. Yes, you need to gather data. But ultimately, those big moments, the goods from the greats, the bads from the goods, it comes down to, do they have that intuition? And that is a feeling. And so I think that's why it's worth developing here, is because how good is your intuition? How good is your taste?
I love that. I think the big dichotomy that it helps people and helps me to understand is, because people be like, well, where is intuition? They think it's a mental thing, but it's not. So the real dichotomy is either we're in our minds or we're in our hearts. So either we're thinking, if we're thinking, that means we're not feeling, we're not in our hearts. So much of what we've been pushed into in Western culture, right, in the information age, is it's thinking, using the mind like a computer. But then we're not in our hearts, either we're thinking or feeling. And so the great leaders, the Jobs of the world, right? They have that ability to access that in their hearts. And so when they can access that intuition, they can have that, you know, this, you know, the same reason people love Apple, right? It's just they had that human spirit come through. Whereas the Bill Gates of the world, right, is very, very mental, that kind of computer brains, and it provides a different level to it. But ultimately, you know, getting back to control, it's the mind that tries to control. And when we get into the work that I do, ultimately it tries to control because of fear. And that's what, you know, fear really is. It's control. And so the more that we can do the opposite of let go of control and we surrender, we get out of the mind and we get into the heart. And that goes from that, we call it actually the in spirituality, right? The dark path, right? The dark Vader, trying to control everybody, and to the light, which is that path of surrender, of lightness. You can let go of the traumas and the fear. You get that lightness back in yourself. And so ultimately what I'm helping people do is to choose the light path by letting go of that mental control of trying to figure things out and calculate them. And it doesn't mean you don't use your mind, but it just means you have access to it, but you have access to the seat of your soul, your heart, which is the same organ I'd hope you use to choose your wife or other major decisions in your life, right?
Yeah, there was two things you said that just struck with me. Is when I met my wife, I'm 36 now, and I met her in 2020. So it was about 5 years ago or so. And I was not thinking of getting married. In fact, I had just moved to Brazil to be single. You know, I was finally like single, ready to mingle. You know, I had a decent setup and was working remotely. And it was exciting times. And then like a month later, I met my wife and I was like, no, I met my wife, you know. But no, and the funny thing, because I had to let go of this older version, the single version of myself. But the feeling, and this is what was crazy, was when I met her, it was like instant knowing. It was like, it wasn't logical. It wasn't something that like I thought of or analyzed. It was like, I met her and it was immediately, this is my wife. And it was like immediately, I got very sick a week or so later, and she came to the hospital with me. And this was in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. And so at the time I didn't speak Portuguese. Thankfully I do now, but back then I did not. And so we're in the hospital system and these doctors are not being helpful. And she's sitting there kind of leading the charge and kind of mother bearing it and helping me out and getting cured. But I remember walking behind her feeling horrible because I was so sick. And I remember just thinking like, this woman is going to have my children. Like, but it's like, who has that feeling? Like, who has that thought? Like, it's not like you just walk around going, yeah, this is the one who's going to have my babies, you know, logically speaking. But it was like this deep emotional, and I'm like now pointing to my stomach, where it was just like a knowing. And I'm not, again, like at the time, especially, I wasn't this deeply spiritual like guy. It just was like, what the hell? Where's that come from? And you're so right. It was an intuition. It was feeling. And yeah, that struck me. The second thing you said that was interesting was this idea of control being the Darth Vader like person. And what's interesting also is, given the hands metaphor, is how he used to like take his fingers and like kind of crush with his fingers.
Yeah.
It all comes back together. But I was watching the show called The Chosen. The one on Prime, Amazon Prime right now. It's the story of Jesus. And I'm not a Christian. In fact, I actually grew up Jewish like yourself. And I didn't really know the Christ story. And so I was always like, yeah, I get it. He, you know, gave himself up to pay for the sins of mankind and yada, yada. And so that's how I kind of dismissed it when I was younger. And since I've been watching the show, I'm like, wow, this is a really amazing story. This is like, even if like, regardless of what you think or what you believe, like the story is so powerful. And especially the dynamic between him and Judas. And Judas, as everyone knows, or if you don't know, Judas is the one who betrays Jesus and basically reports him to the rabbis, the other Jewish leaders in Jerusalem, which ultimately leads to Rome capturing him and ultimately crucifying him, which leads to his death. But there was this scene in the middle of the show which showed Judas kind of confronting Jesus. And Judas comes to him and says, why are you doing this? Because part of the story is Jesus goes into the market and like creates mayhem and tells like basically just like yells at everybody and says, why are you near this temple doing these things, making this money, and you're basically doing bad things? And he goes and he literally like takes a whip out and he starts like, you know, making chaos in the middle of the market, which also calls in the ire, the everybody starts to like dislike him at the senior leadership level in Rome, in Jerusalem, and the rabbis who control the masses are also very upset. And so Judas is going to him saying, why are you doing this? Like, you're the Messiah. You're supposed to take the kingdom and be the ruler of Jerusalem and help us revolt against Rome. And he even saw in one of the scenes where Jesus basically says, like, I don't care if the Romans occupy us and, you know, tax us. And Judas is like, what are you talking about? Like, you're supposed to be king and revolt. Like, what's going on here? And so he goes and basically tries to, like, allow Jesus to be his front man, essentially. He wanted Judas wanted to be the spokesperson for Jesus and to go talk on his behalf. And he says, I'm versed in the path of human persuasion. And so Jesus goes on to say to him, I didn't ask for your opinion, basically. I didn't ask for your help in this way. And he says, well, then why did you recruit me? Why did you bring me into your disciples? Like, what am I here for? Like, I'm a businessman. I'm like, I know what to do and I can help you. And I'm here for that. I'm here to help you with this negotiation, this human negotiation that I'm good at. And Jesus says, why do you not just have faith that I know? And I have the path and I don't need your help. And obviously we know how the story ends. Judas basically disregards that point from Jesus, which his whole point is just believe in me, have faith, you know, give up control. And Judas's whole thing was like, no, we can control this with persuasion and with human tactics, and we can politically maneuver around these people, and you can become king, and I can help you become the Lord of, you know, Jerusalem. But what Judas wasn't realizing that there was a bigger spiritual play at hand. And in fact, the whole point was for Jesus to fulfill the prophecy, which was to have somebody betray him, which was Judas, to then ultimately be crucified, to then pay for the sin of man, to then go create a whole new movement in the spiritual world. So, but it was such a good example of this, where you have the figure of control and persuasion and knowing, and this is the way to go, but he doesn't realize in the process of doing that, he's condemning himself.
I love this story. I want to actually, as a spiritual guy, I'll be the one to ground it back to earth to your audience, right? But So I want to talk to you more about how this interplays with salespeople, right? Because the same dynamic is, you know, so much of the early kind of sales trainings, things people go through, right? I won't name the names, but we all know, right? A lot of it's kind of this mental manipulation. What are the right lines, the words to say to get people to buy, right? And so much of it, it's this mental idea of, you know, how do I poke them or prod them or get them to do something? But when we can actually get out of our minds and let that go, and we drop into our hearts again, and we're actually secure in ourselves, and we're not, you know, we're on the sales call, and we're actually just being present with them. You know, we're not thinking about the next thing we can take them down or the objection, but we're just being there in our hearts with them. That's when people really open up to us. They actually allow us to go deeper in the sales process, right? They trust us. They're opened up and surrendered too. And so the reason that these spiritual elements are so helpful in the business world and sales is that it just gets back to who we are as these fundamentally spiritual beings, whatever religion you're a part of, we're all the same in that regard. That when we have actually people that are in our hearts listening to us, that are there, completely surrendered, not trying to change us or manipulate us, we feel that we're heard, we feel we can open up. And that's when we can learn to trust people and have faith, which is the greatest key, you know, in the sales process is having people have faith in us, because sales is fundamentally it's change making, and it's you know, either we can control them and convince them and manipulate them into creating change, or we can lead them, but just through our own faith. And when we do that, well, one, it's less of a pain to sales. It's so much stress, and it's hard work to be in our head trying to calculate every move. But we can just let all that go and just be us as a human being, connect one to one in our heart. What I've found in my own work and all the salespeople and trainings that I've done is actually people are more likely to buy, and especially in the long haul. They're not, you know, they're not, they don't feel like they're being manipulated, being pushed, being Judah.
No doubt. I think that as a salesperson, there is a real, I'm going to speak for myself, and also somebody who's hired 500 plus reps and manages these types of people. We all want control, right? We want control over how many calls we make and how many proposals we get out and how the pitch goes. We do something called rap practice. I call it rap practice, but basically it's like mock role playing where we all get on and we practice. What do we say? How do we say it? What kind of objections do you have? There's all these, you know, the sales coaches of the world, which is, you know, the Sandler sales method and the Miller-Heiman and the, you know, the Jeremy Miners of the world that are teaching you tactically how to look and how to react and how to feint, you know, like disinterest. And for me, what I have found in my own personal experience is, yes, that's helpful if you have no clue. But the thing that has been the most effective for me is, one, just being deeply authentic, and two, is being a subject matter expert. And it's very difficult to authentically be a fake subject matter expert.
Mm.
So it's much better to be competent and to be knowledgeable and to be a thought leader because you are, not because you're faking it. And generally speaking, even if you aren't the most charismatic person or the best looking person or have the best inflection of voice or have the best sounding voice or whatever it might be, if you're deeply knowledgeable, you're willing to stand behind your opinions and your facts, and you're willing to have a spine essentially and just say, no, this is the right way to do it. And you're willing to match that up with people's problems and seek alignment around those things, you will succeed. But part of that is like giving up control too, because it's like, if I get on a sales call and I say some true things that I know are true because I'm a subject matter expert, and the person just goes, yeah, that's not my fault problem, and I don't need that thing. Okay, fine. Then we don't work together. There's nothing more to it. There's no more persuasion. There's no more like, well, what about this? Or let me go talk to somebody else. It's like, fundamentally, it's like, that organization or that person doesn't need it, then fine. Now, you might get a sales coach thinking right now, yeah, but maybe it's just an objection that they actually do need it, but they don't know. Okay, so fine. Then you can say, and then you can ask clarifying questions. And you can say, okay, I'm hearing that you don't need it. What I always say is then maybe you don't need it. That's like my first lead, my response. And it's like, it diffuses the whole thing because they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, yeah, maybe you don't need it. But I'm curious to see if you actually do need it because you smell, you know, it's like you smell like a rose, you look like a rose, you probably are a rose, you know? And so in this scenario, I just ask more questions. Okay, you're saying you don't need it, but do you experience this context or whatever situation? They go, yeah. Okay, and has this happened to you in the past? Okay, yeah. And have you considered that this is actually costing you this amount of money? Well, I haven't considered that. Okay, but if you did consider that, do you see how it does cost you that amount of money? Yeah, I do. See, but I'm not using like, it's not like pure, like pushy sales.
What I love about what you're doing right now is that we do exactly the same work. So in sales, you're asking questions, right, to dive deeper into this person. And if you're doing it from an honest, authentic place, right, you're really guiding this person within to ask those introspective questions. And I do the exact same thing. So it's so funny when you ask me about what I do. Well, man, we do the exact same thing. And I think, you know, I've said this so much of the time because my whole first, you know, niche of what I do is I work with salespeople. And I think that so much of what sales is again, we're there to create change within people. And ideally, if it's from that, you know, from that place of lightness, you know, positive change. And that requires actually, you know, being able to ask those introspective questions to the people and get them to really, yeah, see what's within them, inside themselves and what's not working. And I did the exact same thing. But I think the more that, you know, again, as we just discussed, the more we know our own self and we can, you know, be open-hearted and help other people explore themselves, then yeah, we can better create the sale because, you know, people feel that we're actually properly guiding them.
You know, what's interesting about the open-hearted statement is this idea that at the end of the day, if somebody's rejecting you, it might be because there's really no problem. And that means you have a bad ideal customer profile fit. That means your positioning might be off. That might be if you're an early stage company, you don't have good product market fit and you're solving a problem that's not worth solving. There's many reasons why somebody might not be a good fit. But I think the key thing is like, this whole theme of giving up control. It's like, if it's not working, it's not working for a reason.
Hmm.
Especially if it happens across a lot of data. Like if you keep on getting the same answer. And the answer might be, well, your product's bad, or your market's bad, or your pitch is bad, or you're just not effective in the way that you're relating to these people. There could be a gazillion reasons. But the more you try to control that, the worst you'll probably do. And what I have found is in those scenarios where I just literally cannot succeed for some reason, I just become extremely open-hearted. And I literally just go, what is truly my constraint that I do not see? What is the thing that's holding me back that I'm not clear on? And what I found, it's oftentimes things that I didn't originally think it was. Especially in my early part of my career, I thought it was like, you know, I thought my sales was really good. I thought my pitch was good. I thought my positioning was good. But it turns out, well, the product really sucked. And I had a false belief about how important brand and product quality was back in the beginning of my career. But it's a good example of like, if I had just earlier just kind of sat back and go, what's really the challenge here? And now maybe you don't know. Maybe you get to the point where you're like, I really just can't see. But this is also about giving up control. Okay, then you don't have the answers. Go find somebody that does, who's a guide. Yes. But with being willing to go talk to a guide or having a mentor is giving up control. Exactly. And I wasn't willing to do that back in the beginning. So it all comes back to this need to be right, to control, you know?
Yeah, and again, the control is, we don't do it, you know, for no reason. The control gets back to the thing we talked at the beginning, which is our deep fears. Why do we want all this control? Well, we're afraid. We're afraid of, yeah, we'll lose the money and we'll lose the person. And again, without going down the whole rabbit hole, but yeah, we're afraid that we're going to be alone again. We'll be abandoned. We'll die. And so that control doesn't come from a bad place, but it comes from fear. And so the whole essence of my work is helping people let go of the fear of losing the sale, of, you know, the fear of achieving, the fear of failure. And it's just letting go. And the opposite of fear, again, of control is it's to be surrendered. And when we're going, so on one side we have control, and the other side we have faith. And so we just have to make that choice. Either we're choosing to be in fear or we're choosing love. And that's faith. And so that's why all this, you know, it all gets back to down to these spiritual principles that are, you know, from the earliest days that are still with us. And you know, that's why all of this, whether it's the sales, as an entrepreneur, it's all a spiritual journey. And every decision we make, it's either out of control or it's out of surrender. And we just got to choose which path we want to take.
Yeah, the and then also your failures that are perceived as failures at the moment might actually be the door that opens you up to the big opportunity that you never thought you had. And,
exactly.
And that's the reason there's that old adage of like, the guy who has the son that has his broken leg from riding on a horse, and then people
the Chinese
come
horseman,
to him and say,
yeah,
the Chinese horseman. He says, "Well, oh, that's so sad." And he goes, "We'll see." And then you know the army comes around and they try to take everybody into the army as a draft, and everyone goes, "Oh, so good, he doesn't get drafted." And he goes, "We'll see," right? And so it's all about like you never know when a bad thing, on face value, is actually a good thing long term. And there's so many times where like what I thought was screwing me at the moment ended up being a blessing because it actually protected me from some ill-fated decision or bottleneck or thing that happened later on, where it's like I'm having a deep fight with somebody at a company or a colleague or something. And then it's like I leave the company as a result, as an example. But that's ultimately what leads to the next venture that then leads to another mistake, which leads to a learning that then leads to some success. And the thing is, it's so complex, especially in entrepreneurship, is you can't begin to know. You can't begin to understand the true impact of all of these little crazy experiences. And for me, like being deeply interested in control and deeply interested in like, you know, kind of the Hormozis of the world, like making it and willing it and, you know, forcing it. My experience has been, it's too complex. You can't control it. So the best you can do is be open-minded. The best you can do is be curious. The best you can do is give it a shot and be completely open that you're entirely wrong and pivot as quickly as possible and keep on doing that. And that's ultimately about intuition and emotions and centeredness. And then when you get blocked, again, get on your knees and pray, baby. Whether it's the Jesus or somebody else, but like at the end of the day, there's forces out of our control. There's movements in this world. I'm not saying it has to be spiritual. But it's just, there's too much. And we as our limited human selves do the best we can, but ultimately be completely open-minded is the moral of the story here.
Yeah, I love that. Ultimately, it's just, do we want to trust or not? Control is a lack of trust. When we're open-hearted, when we're lack of control, whether it's in the business, the outcome of things, we're leading on trust. And in my own experience, right, I spent so much of my years suffering because I was leading into fear, I was leading into control. But everything in my life started happening, right? My health, my hands, my career, my relationships, when I just, I learned to let go. I learned to trust.
Where do you think, like, I think part of the reason such deep need for control when I was younger is that for me and my own family, I was, to a degree, really, I was like the black sheep. That's the way I perceived myself, black sheep of the family. I was the, everyone else, you know, my sister was the very proper, polite, you know, standard kind of golden child of the family. And I was more of the rebel. I had very independent thinking, big ideas, challenged a lot of things. And as a result, I would get in fights with my parents and my parental figures, if you want to put it that way. And I also went through a lot of different school systems and also had a bunch of different, you know, conflicts with teachers growing up. I was a very good student, but I still like very independent thinking and I would challenge people's ideas a lot. And it didn't make me a lot of friends back when I was younger. And when I came out of school, like it was the same thing. It's like, I didn't want to be controlled. In fact, that's part of the reason I became an entrepreneur is like this idea of working for somebody else, doing their bidding and not believing in their vision or believing in their intuition and their perspective and their judgment and all the other things just drove me nuts. And I couldn't imagine somebody I respected enough to be in that position for very long. So I was like, you know what? I want to go do this myself. The problem with that is that I was completely ignorant. I had no idea what I was doing. And I just had to kind of follow my face a bunch to like kind of figure it out. But to some degree, it came from this point of like kind of a level of arrogance, this real like belief in myself. There's like this great quote of like, don't you know who the fuck I think I am? And I don't know where that came from in me. But when I was like 18, 19, I had it. And I was just willing to put myself in these positions. It was scary, but I believed in myself. But I'm curious though, like, this is all to say a question or ask a question. To some degree, it feels like it comes back to that abandonment, that like needing to be competent, needing to know, needing to have the answers. You know, it's interesting because it comes across as confidence and competence and ability, and it does work. I mean, it certainly has gotten me to where I am. But I deeply question whether that's the thing that gets me to my next level.
I really love where you're going with this. So I think the key word you said earlier is discernment, right? Often in spirituality, there's two things that seemingly look the same, but are not. So much of what, you know, I work with a lot of the entrepreneurs out there, the fuel source that they're going off of for most of their life, and sometimes it makes them multimillionaires, is that pride and arrogance. Sometimes to a lot of us, it feels confident. The truth is, it's not. And ultimately, you know, the fuel source for some of the most top entrepreneurs I work with, and myself included, we don't feel that we're good enough inside. We feel that there's something defective about us, and we have to prove to ourselves and the world otherwise. And so that confidence, it's false confidence. It's egoic confidence, I call it. And so that can get us pretty far. It makes you multimillionaire. I've seen it. But the thing is, it all comes from a fuel source that is trying to prove to ourselves and the outside world that we're good enough. And when we can realize that we already are, and this is the big shift for most entrepreneurs I work with, it's a total 180. They're just turning around the boat. They realize that they spent their whole life fighting for something that already was, that they already were good enough. They already were worthy. And when they can have that realization, right? And spiritually, like they use their real eyes, they realize that they are good enough, that they are fine how they were, you know, regardless of whatever was said and the bullies and happened and the abandonment and so forth. They can operate from a place of actually doing things in the world because they want to. It's out of their hearts. It's out of service, out of fulfillment, rather than out of insecurity. And it's an entirely different paradigm shift for the entrepreneurs I work with, even salespeople, when they can operate from that place. And the amount of success they have in their business is, that's what takes them to the next level. So a lot of the guys I work with they feel they're capped. I know a guy right now, he's capped about like 150K a month. And the whole business was built on insecurity. He buys the Lambos and this and, you know, all the stuff that the flashy stuff, right? But ultimately, he doesn't feel fulfilled anymore. Like there's still that thing that's missing. And that's always the case with the top entrepreneurs until they do this deep inner work and they realize, oh shit, I was just acting off of old guilt or early shame or feelings of, you know, being inferior. But when people can let that go and they actually discover who they are, where they operate from business and in their life, it takes a totally different story.
I just said to my wife actually a few days ago, this idea that, like, why do I keep doing what I'm doing? I mean, it's a deep question of, like, why do we do what we do? I think about this a lot with humans, which is, like, we're kind of these neurotic creatures that constantly have to just move forward in life. And it's like, I got to achieve. Where does ambition come from, for example? Like, why do we feel the need to get to that next level? And it's like, and I feel like for a lot of, especially entrepreneurs, there's that constant drive that comes up in us. And I look at that deeply myself and I go, why? Where? Where's it coming from? Is it money? Now, the story I tell myself is it's not about money, that I don't care about the money. Now, I think that's probably lying. Probably I do care about the money, but I say that. But the thing I do say to myself, the story I make up, is that I want to prove to myself that I'm capable of doing what I think I can do. Now, but to your point, and this gets really interesting, is like, of course you're capable. Right? But maybe I'm not. And that's where the doubt comes in. And it's like, well, okay, I'm doing this to prove to myself that I can do it. But so what? Why? What matter? Why does it matter if I can do it? Right? What does that say about me? Well, maybe it means I am somebody to be respected. And maybe it means that I am worthy, right? And maybe therefore people will like me and people will want to hang out with me and I'll have a community and I'll actually get what I really want, which is like cool community dinners and like fun trips with like really good friends and great conversations and like we all kumbaya as human beings. I don't know, right? But it's something that it comes up for me quite a bit, which is like this need to prove to myself that I am worthy. And I say it's worthy to myself, but I wonder more deeply it is like I just want more deeply to be accepted by those around me.
You hit the nail on the head, right? It's like you went down your own, you know, mental rabbit hole and you found truth. And so much of the reason that we push ourselves to be better or get the next level is that, yeah, we want people to like us. The whole Zuckerberg, trilogy with myself was I wanted my father to love me. I thought if I make this benchmark my business, finally I'll get his love and all the kids at school will like me. And what I really want is I wanted to pull people closer to my heart. And we try to make this identity, this entrepreneurship hat, because we think that Zuckerberg figure, right, in my own mind, was going to be the thing that gets it to me. But the problem is then we lose ourselves. We put in on fake masks. We try to do things to fit in other people's worlds. And all of this comes back from abandonment. And we abandon ourselves. We abandoned all of what we actually wanted for other people, right? And so my hands, they said, no more. We don't want to be this Zuckerberg figure. Because in my heart, I didn't want to. This wasn't my path. And so the opposite of, right, you know, if we're trying to be better to seek that human connection is we don't want to be alone again. And so much of the core thing that I, with entrepreneurs, the top ones even, is they all just want that human connection because they're, you know, that's what they're really after, which is so funny because you could get it for free without having to build a $100 million brand, right? But we can have both. We can, you know, this spirituality is not about throwing away money. It's the opposite. It's about realizing that we're okay the way we are. We're secure and feeling whole. We feel whole, right? We reach a state of holiness. But then, yeah, from that holiness is actually creating value in the world, being a service and the abundance that, you know, the divine God creates through it. Just being an expression of that, but not being attached to that, not being attached to the brands we create and the money that we have. And we all know the stories of, you know, the billionaires jumping off the roofs because they lose a few and they think that they're worthless, right?
Well, there's a story that this gets back to the story of Will Smith, which is he actually says this on a podcast, which is the idea of like, he calls it, you know, about rock bottom, right? And rock bottom is the place where you go when you've lost it all, right? You lost the house, you've lost the family, maybe you're on drugs, you're about to die, you're destitute, you're sitting in a swampy sewer mess of a human being, and you have nothing left to live for. And there's this deep questioning of like, what am I doing with my life? Why am I here? You know, and there's these deeper kind of questions, or I just want to give up. I don't want to be doing this anymore. Certain people would react to that in different ways. But then he says there's this idea of something called the cliff top, which is like you get to the top. You get all the way. You've climbed the social ladders. You've had as much fame as you can get. You've had all the rewards you can get, the most sex you can have, all of that type of stuff. And you get to this point where none of it means anything. You've eaten all the five-star places. You've been to all the resorts. You've been to all the fancy, you know, everything you can imagine, but you're just, he says it's very similar to the same kind of feeling you might have when you hit rock bottom, which is this deep questioning of like, what fulfills me? Why am I doing this? Or how do I survive? And he says his takeaway from this, I don't know how it came to this, but his takeaway was, what do all those things give you? The Lamborghini, for example, or the mansion or the fame. He's like, it gives you a feeling. And a feeling is an emotion in some sense. And he's like, and all of that's just inside you. He's like, all of that is inside you. And therefore, you don't need all that stuff to get a feeling. You can have the feeling in the completeness and the wholeness and all that kind of stuff without the attainment. But more deeply is like, even when you get it, you might not have the feeling you want. And so then the question is, well, how do you get these feelings? How do you get the feeling of like fulfillment? And how do you get the feeling of wholeness? And how do you get the feeling of self-worth? And how do you get the feeling of love, you know, and authenticity or courage or whatever it might be? And his whole thing was, well, you got to look inside yourself. And that's basically the same, you know, the same lesson that you come with. And you say the same type of idea. So I just thought it was interesting that you brought up this idea of like rising up, you know.
I think, you know, right before we hit the record button, you were saying something beautiful about, you know, it's all about coming, defining ourselves, really. That's what we're after. And like the very earliest part of my journey, I had my own mentor, my own spiritual guide. And he said, you know, Madison, what you're seeking is you. And the answer is love. And at the time, I intellectually, I kind of got it, but it wasn't years later that I actually did it at work. And I'm like, oh my God, that was it. That was all I was looking for this whole time, was just to find myself again. And the way we find ourselves again, you know, it was by letting go of all the shit that we were chasing before, all the stuff outside of ourselves that we thought would make us happy, whatever it is, business, all the outside things you just mentioned. But then so much of what we're looking for, all of us, is we want to be us again. We want to be able to be authentic, to express ourselves, to have our own love, our own joy, to be accepted as we are. And so much of all this stuff we chase as entrepreneurs is people seeking people's outside validation for that stuff. But we don't need it, as you just said. And it's just learning that we are already okay the way we are. We have everything that we need within us and the love. And when we can do that, all of the physical actions that we do in the daily life, business, sales, relationships, become so much more easier. Because our own sense of security and self-worth isn't on the line anymore. All those emotions we want, they're already within us.
I was watching a thing on Instagram the other day that described that there's certain emotions that have the most powerful impact on the human being. I don't know if this is true. I'm quoting it from somebody who's quoting it, so I could be completely making up some bullshit right here. But I thought the idea was interesting, which is everyone thinks, like, what's the most powerful emotion? What do you think the most powerful emotion? Love, right?
Love.
So everyone goes, it's love, 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 right? And it's the obvious one. But this person said, well, we studied this brainwaves of people, and I don't know how they calculated it, but they said the one that actually had the most impact, whatever
is
that
is it gratitude?
Is, wasn't gratitude.
Okay.
You actually already said it earlier. It was authenticity.
Authenticity, okay.
And so it was this idea, and they said it was like 42 times more powerful than love. I don't know that, like, I don't know what the 42 time multiplier was on. I don't know exactly what it was, but that was the idea. The story was authenticity is more powerful than love by 42 times. And it was this idea of fully self-expressing oneself and being just really honest with yourself and with others. And that if you can live that type of life, and what's interesting, if you think about like at the highest level, life and death, the number one regret of the dying is not being fully authentic and living the life that they want. Which I think is interesting. You know, it's not that I didn't love enough or I didn't get loved enough, although that's one of them. It's like the top 10. But the number one is I wasn't authentic to myself. And so I just think that's a good place to potentially leave this, which is like, how do you live a more authentic, true and honest life to yourself? And part of that is giving up control, being deeply honest with yourself, being open to the idea that you don't have all the answers and you might be blind at the moment, and that you need to go on a journey of discovery. So
I couldn't finish it better. Amazing, Ben.
So to let everyone know where they can find you, if they want to either work with you or just follow you on social or anything, where can people find you?
Yeah, both my Instagram and YouTube channel are at madison.brussman. My name has two D's in it. So M-A-D-D-I-S-O-N. Also my website, madisonbrussman.com. And yeah, I'm sure there'll be links in the the description.
Yeah, so guys, check it down below somewhere in the YouTube, or if you are on Spotify or one of the other RSS feed podcast places, go ahead and check it out. I'm sure we'll have another discussion. I highly encourage everybody who has not gone on their spiritual journey or to consider these things to get in touch with medicine and or any type of self-development, life coaching, retreat-based spiritual exercise, because I think it's great to get started, and at the very least, you'll learn something about yourself in the process. So thank you, everyone. We're going to sign out here. Again, Ben Reed here with the Next Gen Sales Leader podcast, and I will see you guys on the next episode.
Thank you, Ben.